Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, January the 22nd. By the way, that was the music of my good friend Carlos Guedes, who is from Venezuela, and we get to play his music on our show. Always enjoying doing that. We're talking about music tonight, in a way, we're talking about music, although it wasn't just music that was recorded and released on vinyl records. But today, our friend Frank Burke is joining us for what I think is a very interesting topic. In fact, let me say hello to Frank all the way from Wisconsin. Frank, there you are. How are you?
Well, thanks. How are you doing, Silvio?
Well, I always ask you, so I cannot fail you. How is the weather in Wisconsin?
The weather was beautiful today. It's been, for the last few days, it's been in the 60s down to the 50s, and in some cases it touched the 40s. But, occasional thunder showers, but a lot of sun also. Things are greened up now. And we had 2 weeks of very hot weather, just beastly. It got up to 90 and set records. And that's not Wisconsin in June. So we're enjoying this immensely, and it's beautiful.
Great. Well, we've had some hot weather ourselves down here. I think everybody did.
I heard that.
Yeah, I think just like everybody in the country had it, and we had our share of it. But today was actually a nice day. It was in the 80s today, which is a nice relief for most of us from the kind of weather we've had. Well, this is a great topic, and I should explain to the audience how the show came about. There was a great editorial in the Dallas Morning News about vinyl records making a comeback, that kids are using them now or listening to them right now. And of course, all of us remember vinyl records. Just to give you an idea of vinyl records and how, you know, what they meant to us, I remember listening in a history class. I remember listening to the Kennedy Nixon debate on a vinyl record. Because they would release these things on vinyl, you know, before you had cassettes you always had reel to reel tapes, but those were very expensive as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
But you had vinyl records and you had many many important moments released on vinyl records. I remember this is a real treat. I had a friend in Wisconsin who had a vinyl record of the 1957 Milwaukee Braves. That was the team that won the World Series. And there was a vinyl record of their entire season, you know, like a summary of the season.
Yeah.
And it was
on
a vinyl record. We kind of grew up listening to this stuff. And you know, in fact, I was going to ask you this question before I went any further. I don't know the answer. I'm guessing about 100 years ago, but do you know what the first vinyl record was?
I don't know what it was, but I can tell you just a little bit of history.
Sure.
The records, of course, the old ones rotated at, the very old ones rotated at 78 RPM. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And you had one song on a record. And in the very old days, the early part of the century, a lot of them were one-sided. And then and they were acoustically recorded, meaning that literally the performer, let's say Enrico Caruso, stood in front of a little horn and sang into it with the orchestra behind him. And that went to a wax record that was just cut as the needle vibrated because of his voice. It impressed the grooves in a wax record. The wax record was then coated with powdered gold and made into a master from which other shellac records, that's what they used, were struck. Now, in 1926, electrical recording came in. And electrical recording, of course, used a microphone and had a much greater fidelity. On the acoustic recording, a drum could not be used, a regular, you know, like a drum with a skin on it. They had to use a wood block because it would mute the tone. But electrical recording was a great improvement. Now, with the coming of radio, they used to use what were called transcriptions. These were very large, 2.5 feet in diameter, plates on which the shows could be recorded. And that's the way a lot of them were preserved. Now, of course, that during the war, they used transcriptions to, transmit orders or instructions. Not a lot, but in some cases they were used. Back in the 30s and 40s, there was a fad for paper records. They were like pieces of cardboard with the grooves in them. They rotated at 78 RPM. Okay, in the 1940s getting into the 50s, at Columbia Records, Goddard Lieberson, who was a producer, and I think he may have been the in charge of A&R, which means artists and repertoire, he worked on the development of the long-playing record. And I knew his son, Peter, who I believe is a composer today. He went to NYU at the same time I did. But Goddard Lieberson was largely responsible for that. And ultimately, they played with other ideas. One, which you'll remember very well, is the 45 RPM.
Oh, yes,
which
absolutely.
Which reached its zenith with rock and roll songs because the songs were short and you had one on each side. There was the A side, which was the hit, and then what was called the B side, which was the song right. You never heard.
Or the flip
okay,
side.
So the, right,
the flip
side.
Sometimes they call it, and now on the flip side is this, you know.
Yes.
I want to hold your hand on the A side, and I saw her standing there on the B side, you know, something like that.
Right. The original long-playing records came in two sizes, 10-inch and 12-inch. Mm-hmm. And in a while, 12-inch became the standard. So there is your brief history of the development of sound records.
Well, that is great. I'm glad you gave me that timeline because I remember, when I lived in Cuba, there was a neighbor that had a 78, what they used to call, 78 RPM records. And they were like, they would go around real fast. It was like, they go around so fast and the needle would almost like swim across the tracks, you know? And,
right,
and then, of
right.
course, the 45 came after that. And I remember as a kid in Cuba, a 45 that somebody had a 45 of Elvis and Blue Suede Shoes on RCA.
Uh-huh.
I remember that. Yes. There was a neighbor who had one of those. But the other part of the vinyl record or the sound records was the needle. And the needle... is really an amazing thing because you remember that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, I'm sure you do, when George and I can't think of the lady's name right now, it was George Bailey and
Donna Reed played the role,
Donna Reed played, but the name in the movie, I don't remember right now.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where when he comes back and they meet again and now, Donna Reed is now a very pretty young woman and they meet. And I guess he goes up, he visits her and she's playing a record and she takes this, and I'll never forget this. She takes this needle, which is about the size of a mouse for your computer these days and puts it down. And I kept saying to myself, wow, you know, later on, I remember going to Radio Shack and getting these needles that were maybe really little. And eventually, you know, the needles became almost like symbols of technology too, because I mean, the progress that was made on making
yes.
those needles was amazing. So I guess the needle, more changed over the years as well. I don't know if you remember any of that.
Yeah, of course I do. Let me make a confession here, Silvio.
Yeah.
When I was 13 years old, and I'll give you the year, 1960, I first got interested in opera. And I got interested in opera because I'd heard people in the family talk about Enrico Caruso. So mm-hmm. with my graduation money, I bought an LP, and a vinyl LP, called From the Best of Caruso. And I began to get curious as to how he originally sounded to the people of his time. So I began to collect antique records and phonographs. And I still have most of my collection.
Wow.
And you had what you call a needle in the old days, you had to unscrew, there was a set screw, and you removed a little needle, which was about, I'd say, 5/8 of an inch long, a metal needle, and you replaced it, you put a new one in, and turned the set screw, and that was set. A needle in those days, those needles would last only through 4 or 5 playings. They got dull very fast, and if you really valued the record, you change the needle very often because it could ruin the record. Now, as time went on, the needle became more sophisticated. But what you were talking about is, in the vinyl era, is actually called a stylus because it's a little piece of diamond.
Right,
most of the good ones are diamonds. Now, in the early days, the phonographs, the tone arms, which hold the needle or the stylus, the stylus was reversible. They had a little tab that said 78, and you could turn it over, and it said 33, because the vinyl ones rotated at 33 and a third RPM. So then, of course, they gave up on 78 because mm-hmm. the 78 records were no longer being made. But the vinyl records are, I have several hundred of them, I have to confess, in every genre except heavy metal and rap. So.
Well, I do remember seeing on Amazon one time something for sale, an Elvis 78. And it
yes.
was Kentucky Moon, Keep on Shining, I think that was the name of the song.
Yes,
it was on. It was on Sun Records, which is where Elvis used to record before RCA. And they did make some 78s. Now, the other thing, too, about 78s that made them a little bit less attractive, Frank, was that they would crack very easily, as I recall, Frank.
Yes. Absolutely. They would crack, and there was a lot of surface noise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the original phonographs were wind-up. This was before there was a lot of electricity around. So you've got
yes.
a spring that you've got to wind up. And there was a speed control on it. You had to oil the motor, and you had to have it at just the right speed. And, you know, there have been many re-recordings made of singers, including like Caruso. And if you know his voice, you can tell certain records where the speed was not exact. It was a little slow or it was a little fast.
Yes.
So it's, you know, that's one of the problems with it. But there is there's a pronounced difference. How can I put this? When we got into the CD era, okay?
Yes.
In CD, all of the music, they take the recording of the music still done on tape, although it may today, it's probably done on computer. But you had, in some cases, 4 or 5 tracks going, and then someone had to mix them, which would give more emphasis to one or to the other,
mm-hmm.
and one track or the other. But when you had this thing put together, the LP, let me go back, I'm getting a little confused here. The CD translates music into bits.
Mm-hmm.
So everything you hear is a little bit, a computer bit that is put together. With an LP record, it's analog. It's one stream of sound. And it really is, and this is why people, one of the reasons people are going back to it, especially jazz purists, it is a better, warmer sound. Now, I don't mean to talk so much, but just one more thing. To experience this, what you should listen to is something like, and this is the one I would play for friends. If you were in my home right now, and I said, come on, Silvio, I'm going to play something for you. I'll play a CD, and I'm going to play an MP3, and I'm going to play vinyl. It would be Johnny's Greatest Hits by Johnny Mathis.
Hmm.
Why? Because Johnny Mathis has a very smooth voice, and you will notice immediately that he has a lot of warm overtones in the voice. And when you listen to the same song on vinyl and on CD or MP3, there is a very palpable difference. And
yes,
vinyl is better. So.
I can see that. Let me take a little break, Frank, and then we'll come back and we'll continue
Sure.
our conversation with our good friend Frank. By the way, the music that we play is by Carlos Geddes, and it's all digital. I'm not using a vinyl record, Frank. I think you knew that. All right. So
yes.
we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting today with our friend Frank Burke. Of course, Frank, a great friend of our show and also an author. I have a link to his book on the show information. Frank, a couple of things I wanted to say about vinyl records, and then we'll get into, why, because I've got some opinions as to why I think they're popular again, and I'm sure you do as well. But a couple of memories of vinyl records that I wanted to share, and I think there's probably a lot of listeners. If you're a baby boomer, even marginally a baby boomer, you're going to remember what I'm about to say. Whenever you would get a brand new record and a friend would want to borrow the record, I mean an LP or even a 45, but more an LP, you would say, now, did you change your needle? Because I don't want you to screw up my LP. Because, many times if you would give somebody an LP and they had an old needle, they mess it up. They would screw up your LP. It would never sound the same. So that was, my brother would always do that. My brother would always do that. He would always, like, if I wanted to give somebody a copy of our record to listen, he would say, now, does he have a new needle? Because I don't want you to mess up my LP. And so that's a memory that I have. Of course, that doesn't happen with CDs, I guess it doesn't. The other memory and why I've always liked vinyl, or some vinyl, specifically Paperback Writer by the Beatles, okay?
Okay.
I grew up listening to the 45, Paperback Writer, which is, of course, high fidelity 45, and what they used to play on AM radio. And many years later, in 1990, this is, years later when the Beatles put all that stuff on digital and they released them. And now you had a CD called Past Masters, and it included all those 45s. And I'm listening to Paperback
Yep.
Writer on digital. And I'm saying to myself, there's something missing here. There's something missing in
uh-huh.
this record. It doesn't sound, it doesn't seem to have the same energy or the same, there's something missing. I said, it's almost too clean. It's almost too, I don't, maybe clean is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? Paperback writer on the 45 had a, had this tremendous drive, you know, and energy. And
absolutely.
When you put it on, when you put it on the digital, you know, super, super expensive CD, I mean, I said to myself, you know, I'd rather listen to the Paperback Writer single that I bought for 49 cents at wherever it was that I bought it. I think it was called Factory Hut. That was the name of the place that used to sell those records back then. But that you know, that's an experience. And also another song, too, that sort of fits into that is White Room, Cream. Remember Cream and White Room?
Sure, absolutely.
That song, if you hear it on vinyl and then you hear it on digital, it's like night and day. I'd rather have the vinyl, Frank. So anyway, those are just those are my experiences where I think a vinyl record sounds better than the digital, Frank.
It definitely does. And I'm going to take a very brief interlude here.
All right.
And do something that you're not expecting.
All right.
Okay. And I won't play the whole record, but I am going to play Enrico Caruso's recording of O Sole Mio, and I'm going to play it on a 1905 Victor talking machine with a large horn, which
now
I have wound
it's now,
up.
It's now or never, right? That's
right.
I know that's not the original name, but anyway.
I won't. But, okay, you're going to hear us coming through the horn now.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, that was coming off of one of those horns, you said, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was kind of coming off a shellac record.
Wow. That had a...
Hell of a voice, huh?
He really did. Now, you said this is the one that he... Now, in the previous segment, you talked about how those records were recorded, that one was recorded where he was just like singing into like a little horn, right? Like a little microphone.
Wooden horn, right.
Yeah, and then they made it better later, the electric, I guess you called it.
Yes.
Later. This one, what year was this one, Frank?
I believe it's 1916.
Okay, wow.
So the record is over 100 years old.
And now his
and the
stuff,
sound is not bad, is it?
No, it's not bad at all. Now, Caruso has some of his stuff has gone digital, right, I assume, right? Some of this stuff has...
Oh, yeah, it's been digitized, and they've tried to clean it up, as you say. But even Caruso, if you listen to the recordings on vinyl, they are better on vinyl, I think, than they are on CD. You know, there's one other thing we haven't mentioned about vinyl. You came close. But it's the fact that a huge part, if you were like me, I grew up in a non-musical household. There was a piano there, but it was rarely played. My mother might have played it a couple of times a year. But we didn't have records. We didn't have a lot of records. And I got really interested in music. And a huge part of everybody's musical education came from the backs of the album covers.
Yes.
Because they had good people who were writing up this stuff, and whether it was classical or jazz or pop, you got the feeling about, wow, now I know more about this, because it was serious writing.
Right.
And they paid the better people to do it, you know, critics and everything.
Right. No, you're exactly right. In fact, I wanted to give you some of my reasons as to why I think that vinyl records are back. And I wrote down a couple of reasons. The first one is, I guess, just young people like to be different. So, you know, if they want to try something different, it's part of being young, and they figured, hey, you know, this is cool, you know, this vinyl record, let's play it at the discotheque. Another reason, you just touched on it, which is the actual cover and the information on the back. And then, Frank,
and the artwork,
remember,
on the front, too. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. And then if you remember, and this became kind of popular with pop music, you know, like if you open up Sgt. Pepper's, you had all the lyrics inside.
Yep.
And if you would open up a lot of albums, there was actually a lot of information about this or that inside. I'll never forget the Beatles' White Album came with this gigantic poster that came with the album. So you had all of this stuff that made the album itself, or the LP itself, attractive to as you say, for information, you know, just to look at, you know, to look at. It was much more interesting. Now, they've tried to do it on the CD, and what they've done is they've just kind of minimized the cover, obviously, because of the size is not the same. But it's not the same. I mean, when you're looking at a big...
No, it isn't.
And I look at, you know, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, you know, because it has a very graphic cover, very, very interesting cover. But if you look at that in an LP cover, and then you look at it on a CD cover, it's not the same. And then some of the others, you know, some of the other albums that have very interesting covers. So it's not the same. So I think the album cover, the information, the photographs, and like you say, all the information on the back, and then on the back, they would give you the track listing. I mean, they do that with the CD, but you need a, you know,
you need a magnifying glass to see
it. That's it, to actually read it, whereas in the CD, it was all very clear. So that I think, is what makes them interesting. As, I mean, we still have, my brother and I still have all of our LPs. Now, a lot of the 45s I gave away. When I was living in Mexico, I was, this guy comes over and he's a record collector, and I've got like 500 45s. And I said to him, look, if you're a record collector, I didn't have anything of value. They were just pop 45s and nothing of value. Probably the most valuable thing I had was my copy of Paperback Writer, but you can buy that. I mean, you can get that in the market. That's not a rare thing. And I just remember giving it to him. But what my brother and I used to do is that we would take the cover of the 45 and we put them on the wall. So we had all of these, we had like this wall in the basement of our house where on the wall you had all these 45 RPM covers that were sort
That's
of the
great.
Artwork that we would have. And again, you cannot do that with the CDs or the downloads. I mean, when I think of downloads, you just get the music, but there's nothing else. You just get, nothing else.
You're right.
You don't have all this other stuff that came with the vinyl record, Frank.
No, you don't. And, you know, I'll tell you something else about it, what makes it good. When you have a CD, okay, or you have an MP3, you have no control over that. It's what it is. You turn on the computer, you play the MP3, that's it. Now, but I can remember, and you can too, back in the vinyl era, guys, a number of guys would take great pride in their reproduction equipment, where they had balance, tone, they had all kinds of knobs on it. And, you know, there were a couple of companies that made the preamps, which were usually in beautiful chrome cases with a lot of holes in them. There was Pioneer and Marantz.
Yes.
And a number of them. And those things were expensive. but they were literally studio quality. And you had that, the ability to actually play with the sounds, and guys took great pride in their stereos, and especially when stereo came in.
Right.
And, you know, you had like, first time I really, really heard it was with a recording of West Side Story, and Maria's voice came out of one speaker and Tony's voice came out of the other one.
Right, right.
And then they melded together.
Right. No, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And then I got to tell you this, because you touched on something that just reminded me when you touched about people taking great deal of care of their sound equipment.
Yes.
It reminded me of a story. There was a guy in our high school who did something that I've never known. Nobody else had done this before. He would buy a brand new album, make a cassette of it, and then put the album away and never play it again, because he said he wanted the album to retain its original sound or whatever, because he kept telling me that every time you put the needle on it, you lose a little bit of the sound. I mean, that's what he kept telling me.
Yes.
So he would make a cassette of the album and listen to the cassette, because he wanted to preserve the quality of the original of the original vinyl, which I would, you know, I thought was a really neat story. And, you know, over the years, I kept thinking about that guy and asking myself, you know, he had all these brand new albums because he played one time. But it is technically true, Frank. Please tell me if I'm wrong, right or wrong, but it is technically true that every time you would play an LP, you would lose a little bit of the original, because the needle would, in essence, make it an older sound, right?
I wouldn't say every time, because if you recall, and on your, if you have a turntable, the tone arm is balanced. Now, over time, anything will wear. But you would have to have the auditory equipment of a German Shepherd to notice the difference.
Right. Okay.
In a lot of cases. You
and
know,
I don't.
Which
I don't have that.
No, neither do I.
Right.
Which brings us to another thing, and that was one of the great failures that was supposed to be take over the world, quadraphonic sound.
Oh, my God.
That came out very briefly. And as opposed to stereo, which was two-track, quad was going to be four. But
right.
The problem was people could not, you know, the human ear can only hear so much and translate so much, which is why, maybe you're wearing the record, but unless you're playing it constantly,
right.
if you play it on a regular basis, you're probably not ever going to notice that.
Yeah.
The worst thing is when somebody would drop the needle on the record and you'd get a pop sound.
Right.
Or a
right.
scratch.
No, you're right. Now, that's right. And that would drive people crazy, especially if you were very much into sound. But my brother and I had a quadraphonic. We went to Radio Shack. Yeah, we went to Radio Shack and we bought a quadraphonic record player. And I remember the four speakers. My mother didn't like that because she thought it was too much room. But because you literally had four speakers, you know.
Well, and speakers in those days were speakers, I'll tell you.
Well, these weren't that big, but they took up room. So anyway, so the first challenge is, well, we had the money, so we bought it. But the first challenge was to find quadraphonic LPs because there weren't that many.
Yes.
So
I
remember the first one that we got, we wanted to like be nice to our father. So we got an LP of Percy Faith. Okay.
Oh boy.
Like a Percy Faith orchestra. So we got that one from my dad because we wanted to persuade him of how great the sound is. And then eventually we got another one by Earth, Wind, and Fire, I remember, that was also quadraphonic. But I don't think that there were many quadraphonics. I think, like you say, it was a total failure. And and it pretty much went out. And I think the quadraphonic was eventually, I may be wrong, but I'm just following the timeline here in my head. But I think when the cassette basically took over, which would have been, and I guess, in the mid-70s or late-70s, the quadraphonic, because we never, as I said, we know, we never really had much use for a quadraphonic. we were playing stereo on it, you know, which was kind of a waste of money. But I remember that. But so I think that, you know, what you were saying about the LPs had a lot more character, the covers, that is, the cover photos, the cover information. And I did something before the podcast. I looked up at Amazon what it would cost to get a copy of the Beatles' Rubber Soul on vinyl, what it would cost today. Uh-huh. And it was $38. $38.
Wow.
Compared to, obviously, the other digital whatever, which is more like 14 or 15, and downloads are like $3.99 or something. So it is a more expensive hobby, I guess, vinyl. But where the kids are listening to, I mean, to the vinyl these days, is in the discotheques, because the for the DJ, the vinyl is cooler to play, I think. That's where I think having a lot of success, you know, because you can, you know, you can play around with the record more, like, you know, move the record, and, you know how they do it. You cannot really do that with a CD.
No. And one of the things about the vinyl, I think as it becomes more popular, and I think it will become more popular, the prices will come down on it.
Probably, yeah.
Because I can remember, I have a recording now. This is a one-sided recording of the sextet from the opera Lucia di Lammermoor with Caruso, recorded probably about 1913, somewhere in the early 1900s. One-sided shellac record, and the price on it is $7.
Wow.
And that's when people were making $3 a week in the coal mine, if they were lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But the prices on all of that stuff, once it gets into circulation, it will come down. But, you know, there's one other thing that, as a real audiophile, and I can tell you are, and they used to be, got a great magazine, Hi-Fi Stereo Review. You probably read it. I did,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely.
And it reviewed all this equipment and records and things. But the one thing that's so important that people don't pay attention to is the acoustics of the room in which you are listening. Because if the room is not proportioned well enough, you can have the greatest setup in the world, and you're never going, it'll sound good, but you're never going to get out of it what you could if it were in a better place. And, you know, that's one of the things that you really have to think about. And I can remember guys that I knew who would buy, like, foam and put it on the wall so that they could you know, have this great listening chamber for the jazz records of the time. But yeah, it's vinyl is great stuff, and I am so glad to hear it's being appreciated, because one of the great tragedies was when vinyl went into eclipse, the hardware disappeared.
Yes.
It was tough to find turntables.
Mm-hmm.
It was tough to find a stylus. You really had to go looking. I mean, thank God for the internet, where you can get this stuff. But it's one of those things where you wondered, is this ever going to be possible? Or if you had a turntable, there are two types of turntables, direct drive or belt.
Right,
and
right.
If you lost the belt, if the belt wore out, where are you going to get another belt? Well, now you can get them. And I'm very glad of that.
Well, I thought that a lot of that stuff would be lost forever when the CD took over in, let's say, the late 80s, and then when Radio Shack went out of business, because Radio Shack was the place where, you know, we used to get all those little bits and pieces for our sound equipment. That's where all of the jacks were, and all of the needles and the stylus and all of that. But I do have a final story here, Frank, about vinyl that I thought you would appreciate, maybe relate to. When my brother and I used to buy records, and what we would do is we would make a deal with our father, and the deal was if you get an A, let's say, you get an LP. If you get a B, you get a 45. That was kind of the deal. It was a deal like that. It was kind of like that, right? I mean, and so based on the report card, we knew how many 45s or LPs he would buy us. But anyway, back then there was a, this is in Madison or Milwaukee, I think Madison, there was a place called Harmony Hut. That was the name of it. And yes. I don't know if it's still there. I don't think it was a chain because a lot of that stuff back then was not chains. And so I remember we would go look at records. And this was a big hobby. You know, you go look at all the records and it was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And I remember, this is something I have never forgotten. The stereo LP was $394. And the high fidelity LP was $294. I never forget that. $394 for the stereo, $294 for the mono. What they call high fidelity, I guess they called it.
Yes.
Although some people call it mono, I guess the same thing, but high fidelity. And
yeah, mono
and then,
was on stereo.
Okay, there you go. And then you had the 45s that we would buy for either 49 cents or 69 cents. A copy.
Wow.
So if you gave a kid a $5 bill, he could almost come home with the top 10 that week.
Yes,
you know, because you could get so many records. And all I can tell you is just from looking back at it in my own life, that vinyl records were so much fun to grow up with.
Yes, they were.
There was just so much about them that gave us so much fun, and in my case, it was just listening to the music, not so much the technical aspect of it, just the music part of it. I loved it, and I am like you. When I saw that editorial that they're coming back, I said, "I bet Frank is going to be happy to hear that."
Yes, he is. Well, you know,
so,
the other thing is,
sure,
you were taking it out. First of all, inside the album cover, there was a paper envelope
that
the record was contained in.
Right.
And you took it out very carefully. You held it only by the sides. You did not put your fingers on those grooves. And you flipped it over and you let it down very easily on the turntable. And, you know, all of that, and the record was shiny. It just shone beautifully. It was, and the labels were pretty, and it was an aesthetic and sensual experience. It was the difference between reading an actual book and holding it in your hand and knowing its personality and reading it on the computer where every book would look the same.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right, but I know what you're talking about. Now, the Elvis LPs, I remember this, because my brother used to love Elvis, and so he bought a bunch of his LPs. And when you took out the Elvis, when you took it out of the cover, there was like an inside cover or an inside photo that, I remember, had all of the Elvis LPs. It was like a promotional thing. And it had all of his LPs and 45s and what they used to call extended plays, which were four songs on a 45. All that stuff was on there. So those, in most cases, you're right. It was just a little plastic cover, but the cover of the actual disc. But in the case of Elvis, as I recall, there was a big informational one. Well, Frank, I want to thank you so much for making my evening here with vinyl, a conversation about vinyl records. I knew that we would find something to love and remember, and I'm so happy that you're joining me tonight. It was just absolutely great. Maybe someday the kids will talk about how CDs disappeared and they were replaced by vinyl records, Frank.
Well, you know, the other thing, the other thing, and CDs are disappearing because it's now all this MP3 stuff, but I have to have the actual thing. The one other thing I will mention, and you touched on it, and I don't mean to hold us, but it's the record stores. There were beautiful record stores in Chicago. In New York, it was Sam Goody's. in Chicago, it was Rose Records, which later became Tower Records. And they were on Wabash Avenue. And Sylvia, there were five stories to the building. And each one had a different type of music on it. And the top one was international. You could go up there and buy records. When our son was studying French, you could buy records from France, from Israel, from Cuba, from you name it, it's there. And there's the album cover in the language. I mean, it was magnificent, and it's all gone today.
It's all gone. And now that you mentioned the record stores, I remember one time going with my parents to buy a record. We were shopping and we stopped at a record store. And my dad wanted to get a Tijuana Brass album.
Sure.
You remember those, right? Tijuana Brass.
Herb Alpert, sure.
That's
absolutely
right. And the one with the cover, the whipped cream with the girl and
yes,
the whipped cream, which is a very... very cool. That was a good, actually, that was a very good album too.
Yes,
and I remember
was.
That
yes, it was.
That you could take, they would let you have a copy and you can go into these little rooms and listen to it. You could like test it, you know, say, okay, well, let me hear this. So you could hear what what it was like. And that, you know, that was kind of a nice feature, I thought, because they had like used copies that you could hear, of course. And I thought that was kind of cool that they would let you listen to a little bit of the album. So anyway.
Well, and so, some of the guys who worked there, the clerks, you knew they weren't making a lot of money, but they knew music back and forward. You'd go to one guy and say, look, I'd like a record of something. I don't know what it is. Well, can you hum it? Yeah, I'll hum it. Da, 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 da. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's Grieg. That's The Last Spring. And you know, here's where they are. God, unbelievable, unbelievable.
Well, it really was, and many of those guys, I don't know. I always had the feeling every time you went into a record store and you met the staff that they had fun working there. That it wasn't, as you say, for the money so much as it was just the fact that it was fun because, you know, they were having fun working there. You know, and it just seemed that way. By the way, speaking of Sam Godoy, was that the one you mentioned out of New York?
Sam Goody.
There was Sam Goody. There was a documentary on HBO that came out a few years ago about the history of that store and how he went into a lot. Yeah, he went into a lot of different cities around the country. Eventually, he went around the world as well. And there was a very interesting documentary. It was several parts. And I remember watching that on either one of the channels, HBO or something, maybe the History Channel.
Well,
I don't remember.
It was
a fascinating story of how the store came about. And they spoke to a lot of the founders and they spoke to a lot of the managers over the years who ran these stores. And it was fun to work there. I'll just put it that way. Those guys had fun working there.
They did.
Well, Frank, thank you so much. I know that.
Well, thank you, Sylvia.
We could probably do this again some other time. But
yes, vinyl part two.
Vinyl
the flip side
two.
Of vinyl.
Yeah, well, the B side of the vinyl show. You know, we'll call it that. The B side of the vinyl show. But maybe there is a B side to the
well,
vinyl
and you,
show.
We still have to do the rock and roll show, and you're such an accomplished rocker with all the Beatles knowledge. That will be a lot of fun.
Well, we will. We will. Let me let me work that one in. But thank you so much, Frank. You have a great evening, and give my best
you
to Peggy.
You too. Thanks so much, Silvio. Yes, and love all to right. the family and to the audience. God bless.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Frank Burke. Looking back at vinyl records, if you can believe it, vinyl records are back. People are actually buying them. You know, we grew up listening to them. I thought they were all gone, frankly, in the late 80s. I thought it was over, but they're back, and I think it's great. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.